Hello everybody, it's George from Ireland. Welcome back to my channel. This is the International Day of the United Nations Peacekeepers. So well, I'm one day late, sorry, as usual, 29th of May. The Blue Helmets. So remember, the United Nations established really in the Second World War, but okay, formally towards the end of it, 1945. And had UN peacekeepers almost straight away. First of all, intervening in the Indo-Pakistan conflict, helping to negotiate certainly a ceasefire in 1948 and so on. They were there in Palestine, the end of British Mandatory Palestine, and they've been many places. They had a very long-term mission in Cyprus. They've had one in Lebanon, and it relies on United Nations member states contributing their own troops. But back in the League of Nations, the precursor organization to the UN, which overlapped with it, the League of Nations only actually formally wound up in 1946, and indeed some of its buildings were inherited by the UN. Some of the same individuals worked for it. And the Palais des Nations, the former League of Nations HQ in Geneva, is owned by the UN today. There was an idea in the League of Nations period that there ought to be an army for the League and a navy and an air force. And people would swear allegiance to the League and renounce national citizenship. So would be genuinely loyal. And there are United Nations passports. That's one of my bright ideas, to have, rather than have member states lending their troops to the UN. And it's very difficult to get national governments to agree what the mission is. There's mission creep. Then there's election, a new government in whatever country, they withdraw troops. Reading about, you know, shake hands with the devil, Oscar Romeo's time in Rwanda, a Canadian UN peacekeeper, and it was just impossible. His hands were tied because it took so long to negotiate between all the governments of the United Nations. And this government wanted that, and the other government wanted that, and their rules of engagement were so restrictive, he wasn't able to carry out his mission effectively to protect civilians. He still managed to save some people. He could have saved way more had he been allowed to exercise his discretion and been a bit more proactive. So if there was a United Nations Army, Navy, Air Force, or whatever, and people were given UN passports, and there are UN citizens, and they renounce national citizenship, and they'd have to, where are they going to live? Because the UN almost owns only a few buildings here or there. There's some countries like Argentina, the right to immigrate, say, well, they can all live here, or all UN passport holders can live whatever country, then that actually might be viable. But nevertheless, it's done a lot of good, and it can't solve every problem. There have been UN unarmed observers. It was a Norwegian in Syria early in the conflict. That didn't happen, and so on. Kazakhstan has got English-speaking UN peacekeepers. In Cyprus, there have been Indians. There have been Argentines. There have been Swedes and Austrians and so on. They're often neutral countries. You know, Sweden and Austria were not members of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. Sweden now is, but until very recently it wasn't. Now, the Republic of Ireland, you know, our defense force is very small, like 8,000 troops. We don't have big assets. We spend a tiny fraction of our GDP on defense. And so it was considered very much our interest that the UN should succeed, because for a small country, either remain rigorously neutral or you join a mighty alliance. We opted for the former. And sometimes wonder, was that a mistake? But anyway, that if we are invaded to something, our only hope is the UN come and save us. Therefore, we want to see the United Nations succeed. And so not getting in major conflicts, and that was what the army is doing, serving in Lebanon, in Namibia, in other conflict zones, serving with distinction in the service of humanity. And many Irishmen, Irish women have made the final sacrifice for the human race, not in furtherance of any narrow national interests or ideology or whatever, just completely unselfishly. And so they proved their valor, which was magnificent and reflects the greatest glory on old Erin. There's also United Nations police and so forth. Now, India punches above its weight, said peacekeepers in Liberia, particularly female soldiers. Pakistan has sent peacekeepers to various countries. So I just don't think any other conflict zones where they are. Obviously, they're badly needed in Sudan, where there's been the civil war raging for about 20 years, very unreported. Things like the Tajik civil war, there were no UN peacekeepers there. Now, the African Union has got its own peacekeepers, rather than peacekeepers coming from other continents. Seems like neo-imperialism. They said Africans will sort this out. They have done in Cote d'Ivoire and elsewhere. Goodness. So this is to commemorate and celebrate what they've done, supervising truces and so on. So so Dag Hammarskjöld was a Swede who was a United Nations Secretary General. And he gave his life in the service of the United Nations when he's trying to sort out the Congo crisis, former Belgian Congo, and his plane crashed in Zambia and was killed. I think the only United Nations Secretary General to die in the line of duty. There are some conspiracy theories about that, but most likely it was just an accident. And then the Dag Hammarskjöld Medal was struck to be awarded to peacekeepers, well, posthumously to those who've made the final sacrifice for that. There have been Canadian peacekeepers in many countries like that. The United States, I'm not sure, has ever contributed to this. So all sorts of countries have sent peacekeepers there. And it's actually a testament to the success of the UN that the Argentines and the Brits managed to run the peacekeeping mission successfully together in Cyprus, despite having fought each other in 1982. Within 20 years, they were doing that. And I'm not sure where United Nations peacekeepers are to try and come in between the two sides. They can't shoot each other without shooting this side or that side. And they wear blue, sky blue. Why? We can't wear red, that's communism or socialism. We can't wear green, that's Islam. We can't wear white, because that's often, it was conservatism. Black could be African nationalism or anarchism. I'm not sure what other colors there are. A darker blue is conservatism. They're associated. Orange is, Protestantism or Buddhism or so on, or Hinduism. It associated certain belief systems. They thought that this cerulean, that was more broadly acceptable to people. And that's the flag of the UN. We all have the blue sky over us. In a cloudless day, blue is over the whole world. So there's a commonality, there's a universality to the sky blue. That's why they chose their color. I know white traditionally was the color of neutrality, but it was also color of surrender. Well done to all the United Nations peacekeepers, but obviously that requires a lot of money. More money needs to be contributed to do this. And there have been other UN missions like Restore Hope in Somalia, which didn't succeed in the early 90s when the United States pulled out. Everybody pulled out, Irish Free State soldiers. Obviously, the Free State didn't cease to exist in 1937 as such when On Bunracht na Héireann was passed. Some people colloquially say the Free State. Even I in the 90s occasionally saying the Free State. I heard unionists in Northern Ireland sometimes alluded to Republic of Ireland as the Irish Free State and Siarstat Éireann. And I thought maybe it's an unfortunate echo of the Congo Free State, which Leopold II ruled as his personal fiefdom. So Roger Casement drew attention to human rights abuses there. The United Nations, it could be a lot more effective, but that would require more money. The United States provides something like 25% of its budget. Member states provide money. Now, those with the lowest level of economic development are excused paying because they can't really afford to. The Irish Free State, I wouldn't have duties. They're leaving Lebanon now. Well, it's not Free State Army. Irish Defence Forces, it's just Irish Army. I know we've got our Air Corps, our Naval Service. We don't actually call it a Navy. Well, one thing was escorting payloads, cash delivery. Cash delivery is less important, but the IRA, they were carrying out armed robberies in Ireland in the 70s. So therefore, a Range Rover, Land Rover, where there's at least four soldiers would go. So the armed robbers, it was a deterrent because you have to kill at least four soldiers before you can get your hands on the money. The chance of being able to do that and then get away unharmed yourself are pretty low. Plus, it would outrage the public. Okay, what do you think about the United Nations? Thanks for watching my channel. Make sure to subscribe on Patreon, then to PayPal, George Carlin, 792.com. Goodbye.